Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and an opportunity this week to reflect on some veterans who have left us this month, including Tuskegee Airman Frank Macon, who passed away November 22nd at the age of 97 in his native Colorado Springs. While still in high school, he had already soloed from an airstrip, which now belongs to the Air Force Academy. But as bright as he was and as accomplished as he was, he had some major challenges to overcome. And one of the reasons his book, I Wanted to Be a Pilot, was written was to encourage others in similar circumstances. Here's what Frank said when I asked him how he was doing in school during those years.
Terrible. I'm very dyslexic, and they didn't understand that problem that people that are dyslexic have. And now they, of course, they're farther advanced in it, and they're helping a lot. But I did have a very good memory, so that helped a lot. I learned by the words would move around on the paper in a book or something, and numbers were just terrible. And if I put my finger on them and use my finger, I could stabilize the words a lot better. And so that's how I learned to read.
But you kind of had to figure that all out on your own? No one was helping you?
Yeah, I just figured it out on my own. But anyway, it was really strange. Today, I can't figure out how I passed those tough tests that they gave us to be able to fly. But a lot of the questions they asked had to do with science and physics. And I really enjoyed physics and chemistry and auto mechanics and the things that we did in, I'll say, junior high school and high school here in Colorado Springs. And I got quite a good education in that field. And physics was one of my favorite subjects, and how things work. And it just always amazes me, even today, how the Creator put this world and the whole creation together. Many years later, I'm jumping ahead, I retired from civil service at Fort Carson, and I was asked to join a research company. I'm just awed by how wonderful it is. This world and the creation, and it just amazes me how do the trees know when to turn, when to put the leaves on, when to drop them, when to go, and just all of that. I'm just like a little 10-year-old kid. I'm just always amazed at everything.
You're talking about how good your memory is, so I've got to ask you about December 7th, 1941, because most of the people I've met who are alive then have some kind of memory of how they found out what happened out at Pearl Harbor. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. Well, what I remember is, as I said, I always wanted to be a pilot. I was driving at 14, probably driving before then because, but anyway, my great uncle just went down to the police station. He couldn't drive, and my mama had arthritis real bad. And they asked, so that kid knows how to drive, is all right, he's driving. And they said, oh, yeah, as long as somebody's with him. Now, I took them to a friend's house. I don't know, I was just driving around with the car. There's a girl that used to live in the neighborhood, and I went by to see her, and she says, well, I guess you're going to be a pilot now. And I said, what? And she says, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, and I said, what's that? You know, I never heard of Pearl Harbor. And that's how I actually got involved. Of course, turned the old car radio on, and between the static and whatnot, and they would talk about that. I joined the Civil Air Patrol, and then this is where I really started learning about airplanes, and they would take us flying and teach us how to manipulate the controls, you know. My coordination was always been good. I was on the tumbling team and things like that, you know. And when I graduated from high school, he said they've started a new program in the colleges and started teaching. He told me about Tuskegee. I never heard of it, but, you know, and it was in Flying Magazine. He told me that I could go to there, the college, and the government would pay for it, you know, and I had to go to the new Customs House in Denver and take the test to see if I could qualify. He wanted to put me in the Army Air Corps, and I said, well, I'm supposed to go to the civilian pilot training program. And they called me in and said, you're too young. You have to be 21 to get a commercial license. And so they sent me home. Even after I'd gotten out of school, I would not have been 21, you know. So I came back, went back to work at the old garage, working on automobiles. So the draft board started looking at me, and I went back, took the test, and I got in and got, and then went to Keesler Field. Boy, oh, that was some tough tests. And a lot of was about your physical coordination and whatnot. But you had to have 2 years of college to go to flight school. Well, I just got out of high school. So they sent me to Tuskegee to college. I was there a little while, and I don't know, 3 or 4 months. They sent me to Maxwell Field to take the test again. And they said, well, you more than qualify for 2 years of college. And so then they sent me to the base.
And I'm just curious, because this is, you know, most of the people listening weren't alive during that time period. And maybe they've heard some stories, but they didn't live through it. The fact that our nation's military at the time was segregated, that Japanese Americans were isolated over here, that African Americans weren't serving with whites in the same unit. How did that strike you? Did that disturb you? Did it seem odd? Or was that the way things were then?
I wasn't used to being down south, and I wasn't used to that because the school I went to was integrated. Native Americans, Mexicans, and blacks were all, and along Irish and everybody else was, you know. And so it was just really confusing to me. And water, I had to go into this bathroom or a toilet, you know, facility. Or I couldn't drink out of this fountain and all of that. And it was just really ridiculous. And I had just never been involved in anything like that.
And, of course, a lot of these pilots that you're studying with and training with had grown up in the South and had a much different experience. How eye-opening was that for you to glean some of what they'd been through?
The thing was that, well, I couldn't understand anything they were saying, and they couldn't understand anything I was saying. When they found out I came from Colorado, well the first thing was, we're fighting the Indians all the time, you know. And, of course, I'd just play it up. And my grandfather was Indian. And they wanted to know, well, how do you do out there? I said, well, of course he wasn't. I said, well, my grandfather's chief of the tribe, you know. And the guys from Denver, there was some in there, you know, and they just help along with them. There was so many phraseology I was used to. I just had no knowledge of the way they talked, and it was really confusing. I got to fly the Stearman biplane, which was really a lot of fun, open cockpit and all like that, the real flying. Mm-hmm. And then I got to fly the Volte Vibrator, as they called it. It was a BT-13 made by Volte. Then the T-6, of which I really enjoyed flying the T-6. It was very maneuverable.
The T-6 is to prepare you to go overseas, and I'm sure you had ideas of flying one of those red-tailed P-51s, but that's not how it worked out.
No, just before graduation, I knew that I had my uniform, officer's uniform, and everything was hanging in the closet, you know, and I had a real nasty head cold, but I loved flying that T-6, and I said, well, I'll go to the dispensary after this flight. Well, I did, with blood coming out of my ears, you know. And of course, now that little incident just ruined my flying career. But I did get into a lot of flying, but not commercial type, because after I got off, but I got into maintenance and engineering and things like that, and had a fairly successful life, I'd say.
But with the situation with that flight, where you just couldn't resist going up in that T-6 and you ruptured both eardrums, is that what happened?
Both of them, yeah. Uh-huh. And I was deaf for several weeks and in the hospital at the Scott Field. And then they sent me to radio code school, which brought a lot of my hearing back. The war was over with when I finally got out of the hospital. But they sent me back to Tuskegee to finish up with another class. But when it happened, the war was over with, and they said I'd have to re-up because my time was real close of getting out. And I thought about it a while, and I said, oh, I know, I don't put up with this segregated service. I can go home. I know how to fly, so that's it, and I'll make it. But in retrospect, I can say I should have done it, but that was should have, I didn't. But they're bugging me to write another book about what I did do after I got out of the military, because I was kind of involved in a lot of science things and research programs, things like that. And I don't know what I can write and can't write, because I don't know how much is still secret and what is.
Sadly, some of those secrets went to the grave with Tuskegee Airman Frank Macon. That is a grave I'm going to make sure I visit the next time I'm in Colorado Springs. Frank received special permission to be buried on the grounds of the U.S. Air Force Academy. I was serious when I mentioned his book, I Wanted to Be a Pilot, The Making of a Tuskegee Airman, would make a great Christmas gift, especially for a young person in your life. So I have that book linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. And the story of how that book came about is pretty intriguing too. We'll hear that from the woman who helped make it a reality when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank, it's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.